Happy International Women's Day. This is Helen Haig Brown from the Tsleil-Waututh Territory in British Columbia. And I wanted to say, since I am not on my territory, I would like to recognize that I'm on Anishinaabe territory.
And I'm Audrey Huntley. I'm part Anishinaabe and German. Today we're going to talk about the Fraser River Journey. What you just heard was the traveling song. That was taught to us by one of the elders on our journey, Mabel Nipshank. Of the Cree Nation, yeah.
The Fraser River Journey, yes.
So the Fraser River Journey happened in September 2000. 13 Aboriginal women rafted from Prince George to Vancouver. It took 15 days. And we stopped in 9 Aboriginal communities. It was part of the World March of Women to end violence and talk about poverty that women experience.
But also altogether there was maybe 70 people who rafted down altogether that were jumping on and off.
So the Fraser River Journey was part of a year-long research project that was conducted in a participatory action way, as the methodology is referred to. The project was created by the Aboriginal Women's Action Network, which is a group of urban Aboriginal women based in Vancouver. And the impetus for the project was pending reforms to the justice system, or what is being referred to as restorative justice. So this is something that there are a lot of different opinions about in the Aboriginal community. And coming from Aboriginal women, feminist women in Vancouver, there were a lot of concerns because we could see that it was being implemented primarily in cases of violence against women. So the idea was that in cases of intimate violence, relationship violence, a man who had committed this crime against a woman would not go to jail, but rather sit in a healing circle with his victim. And we had a lot of concerns about that, and we wanted to be involved in the process. I might at this point just mention the Bishop O'Connor case, because it kind of epitomizes for me the extent to which the justice system can be used against women, against Aboriginal women in particular, in a very colonizing manner. Although restorative justice is supposed to be a way for Aboriginal people to regain some control over their lives, actually the main case that got a lot of media attention involved a non-Aboriginal man, Bishop O'Connor. This was a man, a priest, who had raped many, many young women in his days at the residential school up in northern BC. And he went through the restorative justice process, which meant that there was a healing circle in which his victims sat with him and were supposed to get some kind of healing. Bishop O'Connor didn't even have to admit guilt. He never ever even admitted to rape. The only thing that he admitted to was breaking his oath of celibacy. And it was a very, very traumatizing process. At least one of the women who was willing to talk about this regretted deeply having engaged with it. So the Aboriginal Women's Action Network wanted to ensure that Aboriginal women's voices be taken into account if there were going to be these kind of changes. And the first thing they decided needed to be done was to educate ourselves around justice and violence, looking at what happens when Aboriginal women experience violence, how does the justice system treat us. So we started the project doing workshops at the Native Education Center in Vancouver. We had women who were recipients of service and service providers, and we got different experts, I'll call them, to come in and do workshops with us on various aspects around violence and the law. And that was about a 6-month process. And during that process, we realized that we needed also to look not just at what was happening in the city, but to go outside of the city into the communities. So that's actually when the idea came up to do the Fraser River Journey, and it was Helen who came up with this idea. So I'm just going to turn to Helen to talk about that.
All right, thanks. The idea came actually when Faye Blaney, who was also one of the women who had come up and was talking about the World March of Women and many different ideas around trying to get an Aboriginal World March going. Meantime, we're carrying this quite heavy research project around the restorative justice issue. And I thought, because I'd been involved with rivers, I'd grown up around the Fraser River in my Tsleil-Waututh territory, and I'd also been involved with rafting down the river, and I'd done a trip from Prince George to Vancouver. I thought it would be a most amazing form of transportation and being able to visit these different communities within the interior, one of which being my own nation and territory. And not only that, it was a traditional form of transportation in which many of our nations have traveled through the province of which is now called BC. As you can imagine, the content in which we had to go through with dealing with violence in Aboriginal communities and with women, it was hugely triggering and stressful and a hard thing to do. And so the river was so calming and something that kept us sane, I guess you could say, in a lot of senses. And it was a really nice way of debriefing together and having the power of the river moving on to our next focus group into the next communities and connecting Aboriginal women from all of these communities to travel along with us. Audrey and I split the coordinating. I did the interior because I was also working at home during my summer, which I worked for my nation's government in the interior, and also, ironically, for the Tsleil-Waututh Restorative Justice Project in my community. But it was only for youth and for youth offenders and for minor offenses around theft and stuff. So this is a really interesting thing that I found working on both of these projects. Gave me some sort of validity, I think. But so Audrey did the southern pieces around Vancouver and all the way up into Lillooet, I'm guessing, along with Donna Dickinson. And I did most of the interior, being from Williams Lake, on which I was situated, and also Prince George and Quesnel area. And it was really hard for me because I have very close ties to my own rural community. And as you can imagine, violence and sexual abuse is controversial, as is, let alone in rural communities. Not only about violence, but many different things. Research, for example, within our own Aboriginal communities has been, I guess you could say, abusive and something that a lot of our people have a lot of apprehension around. And so one of my biggest things was to introduce the project and get women involved in all of these different small communities throughout the interior, and that's a lot of communities, and women who didn't know me, and I had to try to present the research project and ask for permission to even come through to see if they'd allow this to happen within their own communities. Also, the controversy around restorative justice is one of the hugest things. I found so much resistance because a lot of communities were taking initiative in their own restorative justice projects and even playing with the idea of dealing with violence. If you look at the amount of Aboriginal peoples that are incarcerated in Canada, and everywhere, a lot of Aboriginal people do not have a very positive relationship with the law enforcement, being from police officers to court and to judges. And we have a history of that through colonization and still do to this day. There's not trust built in our communities. There's even people that die from police officers in a lot of our rural communities. So as you can imagine, this is one of the things that is a huge problem within our rural communities as far as having safety or a recourse of action for women who are being abused within a lot of our communities. So there is a hope and optimism and being able to take control of our own judicial systems and be able to deal with that within our own communities, because we've lost a lot of people in our community. So there was this holding on to this ideal and hope around the restorative justice initiatives, and this was really, really difficult when going into other communities and trying to gather voices. And it wasn't so much the fact that we believe in locking everyone up within our communities, but we couldn't get around both discussion. It became a defensiveness thing where it was either or, which Audrey calls the law and order discussion. And I found this one a really, really difficult one because I felt in the middle that we needed to start talking about and brainstorming all around the aspects and get down to it and start thinking about the young women and children that are being violated daily within our communities. I was in incredible fear because of going it through on my own South Cotin territory, and so one of the things in which we had to do was ask permission to follow through, to go through all the different territories and raft through and stop on the lands of the different nations, because there are 35 nations within British Columbia, and we passed through probably about 10 different territories. And within that, we had to write letters and present what research we were going to be doing and what we were going to be doing and where we were camping and why we were camping, and hopefully be invited. And one of the most interesting and incredible things, well, this totally makes sense also for colonization and respecting people's territories and land and recognizing that and following the proper protocol within that. And the Musqueam, their lands are within Vancouver, and that's where we ended our journey, had asked for us to sing a song asking permission to land there. And that was one of the most powerful pieces of our journey, because we did connect on so many levels of being able to learn and teach each other our different traditional songs and sing together. But this one was a song that was written by three main people on our journey, which was Mabel Nipshank, Connie Fife, and Jennifer Phillips. And they let us land.
Hey, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo, hey. Territory. We come in good spirits, we come in good faith, we come in sisterhood, building allies with sisters of every race. Hey, hey, yo, oh, hey, yo, oh, hey, yo, oh. Hey, hey, yo, oh, hey, yo, oh, hey, yo. Oh. We the descendants of Métis, Cree, Shuswap, humbly request to enter your territory. Hey, hey, ya, oh, hey, ya, oh, hey, yo. Hey, hey, ya, oh, hey, ya, oh, hey, yo. We, the women of many nations, humbly request to enter your territory. We come in good spirits, we come in good faith, we come in sisterhood, building allies with sisters from every race. Hey, hey, yo, oh, hey, yo, oh, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo, oh, hey, yo, oh, hey, yo.
Yeah.
Good.
Hard work.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I want to talk actually a little bit about what we learned. We went through 9 different communities, and we had the opportunity to spend like day-longs time with 4 of those communities and do focus groups. That was Prince George, Soda Creek, Lillooet, and later on, after our journey was completed, we went back to the Stalo Nation and we did one in Chilliwack. And it was really a powerful experience for these communities to allow us, you know, and that had a lot to do with the work that Helen, I really have to stress that a lot of the work happened before the Fraser River journey, and that we never would have been able to go out there if it hadn't been done with such care. And we really owe a lot to Helen for doing that.
And you.
And me. But mostly Helen, because she is from the territory, and I was really following her lead. I'll never forget having to go to a meeting with 5 or 6, or I don't know how many chiefs, Stalo chiefs. And I mean, I thought I was going to go to a meeting and meet maybe the family violence coordinator or someone, and there was like 6 chiefs of this nation. And thank God one of them remembered Helen from when she was 10 and on the river. That kind of broke the ice. But, you know, they grilled us, and they had a right to, because people have, you know, Aboriginal people have a right to be wary. They have been researched to death, and research has been a colonizer tool. So, you know, there was good reason for people to be wary. And then there's the whole issue around violence being stigmatized, and the danger and the threat that it can present to a woman if she is going to disclose.
Absolutely, yeah.
And talk about this. And I remember just that weighing really heavily on us, mm-hmm. when we were preparing, and we were constantly sort of grappling with our need to want to break the silence and, you know, put that out there and empower women and get women together, because we knew that from our work, you know, organizing and coordinating, we knew that in every community there was a woman who wanted this work to be done. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we knew we're rafting through there, and most of us will not go back, and we will leave the communities, and we will have triggered something, you mm-hmm. know, for each woman who comes to that focus group. And how do we do this in a safe way, mm-hmm. in a way that empowers women?
Empowers women instead of puts them at risk.
Exactly. Completely. So that was a big goal for, or that was one of the guiding kind of themes for us doing this research. And we had some deficiencies, and gee, we didn't have crisis.
What? We were perfect.
No, we weren't perfect. But I think overall, like when I think about the 13 women who started in Prince George and the way each one of them changed throughout the journey, the way I changed throughout the journey, and how our numbers grew and the response that we received in the community, that was so amazing, you know, to come to a community and sometimes way, like many bends in the river before, there'd be people on bridges, women on bridges, waving and honking their horns because they knew that we were coming. Mm. And it was just mind-blowing. And coming into Lillooet and hearing women drumming the Woman's Warrior song, which comes from the Stotliam Nation, that was amazing. And elders, I remember an elder in Soda Creek, a man, you know, owning his own abusive past and saying, "You are doing what we need," and just feeling so validated and, you know, grateful for that. So I do believe, you know, we did a good thing with this Fraser River journey, and certainly the results of the focus group, you know, make it clear how high the levels of violence are and how great the need. Because one of the themes that came up was the so-called normalization, mm-hmm. that women and we have to always see violence in the context of colonization. When we're talking about this, we have to remember it's because genocide is happening in this country, ongoing today, and it is dehumanizing our people, and it is multi-generational, and, you know, the roots of what's happening today are in the residential school system. They are, you know, in people being violated in their youth because of who they are, because they're Aboriginal. A targeted, you know, approach to stealing their culture and punishing them for using their language, denying their identity, and physically and sexually abusing them at the same time. These are the people who went back to their communities and drowned their sorrows in alcohol and drugs, and had no parenting skills and have passed that on. That's what we are referring to when we talk about that multi-generational cycle of violence.
The legacies we fester in.
Yeah, and so thinking of all that, just to do this journey was an amazing thing. And to have women come out to our focus groups and thank us for coming through, and having a youth, you know, join us in Prince George, who at the first focus group was not able to speak about her violation. She had been so brutalized that she was still, 2 months later, in a state of shock. And by the time we got to Musqueam, she was she wanted to be our speaker, and she did a live interview on CBC Radio.
Yeah, she did. And she, and also the bonds and relationships, and the empowerment that we felt as women unifying on this, and the woman you just spoke about too. I'm still
getting emails.
We're still in contact. Hey, Antoinette. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about how we envision ending this violence.
Honestly, I'm really, really only quite comfortable about talking about my own community and my own nation as a Tsaltkotin woman from Unasait In. And Audrey already touched on the legacies of colonization and many different things, and when looking at these things, I think it's 100% important to do, because, first of all, I have no idea who I'm talking to. And so there is one of the things that she touched on is what was residential schools, and I'd like to think I've read this story that was interviewed by a young man who attended residential school when he was a young boy. Was this a young boy? Yeah. And they had dorm systems where they had all slept side by side. And sexual abuse was absolutely rampant within these residential schools all across the board. I mean, Anglican Church is going bankrupt now because of the cases, and that's not even close to the amount of cases or amount of people that are coming forward that have been abused within these institutions. And one thing that really struck me is I remember how much I was angered with our own communities, especially the leadership within our communities, turning their backs around the violence. It being always a hushed topic, a hushed issue. I mean, we all knew who the rapists were in our communities, all the people who were perpetrators of violence, and we were warned since we were children to stay away from them. That was our protection. That was it. That was all. So the knowing of the dysfunction, not so much dysfunction, but knowing of the amount of violence within our communities is dealt with as a secret. And I think there are a couple of reasons. And one I was getting to is a story of the young man in residential school. Imagine, since you're the age of 5 years old, being sexually abused, or the person next to you in the bed being sexually abused, and not having parents, not having anything as a support system or safety or network. The only way humanly possible to cope is to turn and try to pretend that it does not exist. This type of legacy also exists within our communities. The only type of form, turn away, turn away, turn away. This is the most frustrating, aggravating thing that is happening within our communities right now, within my community right now. Not only that, being in a small community, anyone can say this, whether Aboriginal or not, living so closely and that being your only community, breaking out of conformity or challenging any certain thing breaks all of your ties. And I know within my own community, family is everything. And it's your survival. It's everything. And so there's a respect and harmony which is spoken a lot, and that's totally talked about in restorative justice and used quite wrongly, I might add. But this line is constantly being negotiated, and especially women are having to silence themselves, to not break this line, and to stay in, to not be ostracized. And that is one of the other things that is hugely misleading about unifying one another, because or being able to stay healthy in a community, because that's not harmony, that's not balance when it's all happening behind closed doors. And like I said earlier about festering, I say this a lot because I do a lot of youth work. I'm also a youth. I'm 23 in my community, and my anger and frustration around issues being addressed within our community, having enough guts to say enough's enough and standing up, especially as leaders within our community, is not happening. Also, within rural communities, there are power dynamics. There is a very, as I had said, family is everything in my community. That's very much how our governing structures have functioned. And so now with a DIA system, election style governing system, certain families become in control. And this is really scary, as you can imagine, as a young woman or as any woman having to come forward around violence or sexual abuse. It's already hard enough around shame around being blamed for it being your fault. We all know that exists out there. That tends to be quite a natural reaction from women and men. But also in a small community, when, if you can imagine, you are of the family that is not in power, how that dynamic can play out in being blamed and shamed even further than you already do feel because of socialization. So these are a few things, huge obstacles, I guess, I've covered, I know, within my own rural community. And I guess, like you said, we should go into some...
Well, I think basically we go into how we want to stop the violence. Basically, you've already said it, you know.
Castrating! No, I'm kidding. I'm famous for saying that all the time.
Because that was a very traditional Chilcotin means. No, it's true. They're always talking about, they always sell a restorative justice by saying that it is a traditional Aboriginal justice form, but there were other forms like genital mutilation and castration. That's how things were dealt with. So we're going to end on that note.
No, we're not. The international We don't have time. Breaking the silence.
Breaking the silence. We have to break through this idea that it's normal. It's always been that way. Mm-hmm. We have to stop the stigmatization. Mm-hmm. The only way we can do that is by talking about it more and more, mm-hmm. so that more women will be able to come forward. And by starting with the children, mm-hmm. so that children know it's not okay if this is happening mm-hmm. to me, mm-hmm. and it's okay for me to talk about it because mm-hmm. I won't be blamed. Mm-hmm. That is how I believe some change can happen.
Also within rural communities, resources, support right. networks for Aboriginal women, yeah. there are none.
Safe places to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Williams Lake is the nearest town, or it's actually considered a city, and there's 15 rural Aboriginal communities in that location surrounding Williams Lake, and there is not one woman's organization there that deals with rape or sexual abuse.
So that was Helen Haig Brown and Audrey Huntley yeah. talking about the Fraser River Journey for Justice on Anishinaabe territory, Chemigwetch.
Satana, yeah.